Blog Talk Radio.
The information discussed during this show is not intended to diagnose, treat, prevent, or cure any condition. If your pet is currently experiencing any medical issues, please seek immediate assistance from a licensed veterinarian.
Good morning, this is Dr. O'Sullivan speaking, and you have gotten a hold of Holistic Veterinary Care and Acupuncture Center in Prescott Valley, Arizona. This morning, we are fortunate enough to have Ellen Brandt, and we are going to speak about her sweetheart, Tashi. Tashi is a Tibetan Spaniel that has a wonderful, wonderful story to tell about overcoming adversity and learning to wag her tail. So we're all going to try to learn something from Tashi today and talk to Ellen about her long, sometimes arduous journey with Tashi. I want to invite all of our listeners to join in by calling 347-215-6138 at any point in time, and we can answer any of your questions and maybe some of your stories as well. Once again, call into Blog Talk Radio for Dr. O'Sullivan at 347-215-6138. The story of Tashi begins at a puppy mill, unfortunately, and it's very important to me to make sure that people know that puppy mills and puppy farms exist, and I'm always surprised that people don't... I'm always surprised to hear that people sometimes don't know. They don't know where puppies come from when they're in a pet store or other situations. So today's the day I just wanted to try to spread the word and try to be as somewhat emotionally detached as possible when it comes to this issue. So I would like to give some definitions of what puppy mills and puppy farms are. And the first definition comes from the HSUS, the Humane Society of the United States, and the definition is a puppy mill or puppy farm is a commercial dog breeding facility that emphasizes profits over animal welfare and usually contains substandard conditions. That is from, like I said, the Humane Society of the United States, which is a large nonprofit organization in this country trying to help animals. The other definition is the legal definition used in a court case in 1984. It was at Averson and Zygart. The legal definition at this point in time is, for puppy mills, a dog breeding operation in which the health of the dog is disregarded in order to maintain low overhead and maximize profits. So these industries, which is exactly what they are, supply pet stores, supply other facilities that use animals in mass. And there are puppy mills, there are kitty mills, and those types of things. So if you go online or you go to your veterinarian or other facilities where you can get broad stroke information, if you just Google puppy mill, you will get thousands, if not tens of thousands of pages that give information about that. So with that piece of information and that piece of power, we're going to move forward and talk to Ellen a little bit about sweet Tashi and her experience in getting Tashi into her life, as well as where we're at now. And once again, Tashi is a wonderful, wonderful example of how we can, with her example, overcome substandard conditions and adversity of all types, and over the course of time with a lot of wonderful care and just pure love, learn to wag our tails. So I'd like to proudly introduce Ellen Brandt and have her tell her story about how little Tashi came into our lives. Thank you, Ellen, for being on the show today. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you, Dr. Sullivan. Tashi is actually my fourth Tibetan Spaniel, and we have technically two and a half, and it's right now. but we had learned, my husband and I had learned to love Tibetan Spaniels after a rescue several years ago when we were living in Florida. And so when we had a dogless house and decided to rescue yet another, that's the breed we chose to adopt once again, rather than just rescues in general, which we've had many times in the past. I belong to an online group that specializes in conversations specifically about Tibetan Spaniels, because many people don't have any idea what they are, where they came from, what their background is. And they had a notice from a rescue group back east someplace that a specific puppy mill back there wanted to sell all of their Tibetan Spaniel breeding stock because they weren't profitable enough. They had to get rid of all of them one way or another, and the rescue group arranged to for a price to get all of them, which was something just under 30 at that time. They contacted my online group asking first for donations and secondly for foster or adoptive homes. And Jack and I did donate money first and then decided that we wanted to bring at least one of these wonderful dogs into our home. So after they brought out the first family group, they brought them out in groups of six, five females, one male, breeding stock. And after the first one was group was out and thoroughly vetted and neutered and all of the necessary things, I studied the various pictures and descriptions of their size and age and so on, and chose one and flew back east and brought her home. And several weeks later, I got an email from the rescue group saying, don't you have just enough room in your house for one more, because we've run out of foster homes and we can't bring the next group out until more of these dogs find homes and free up our fosters. So, yeah, we're softies. And I flew back and brought Toshi home with us. Toshi is the oldest of the three dogs at home and the oldest of the two rescues from this puppy mill. She had, I don't know how many puppies while she was there, but when she came out of the puppy mill, she had 4 6-week-old pups with her at that time. Apparently the puppy mill owner had tried to keep those little ones so that she could sell them to a pet store, but the rescue group was adamant. Their contract was for all of her Tibetan Spaniels, not just some, and so they bought the pups out as well. So everybody was to get a good, loving home and be out of that. I need to say one thing about this particular puppy mill, too. I don't know where they were exactly or how many, who the owners were, but I was told that in that variety of business, this was a good one. And good being that there were fewer than 200 dogs there, as opposed to the 700, 800, or 900 dogs that many of them have just sitting in cages, day in, day out, making babies, which is basically what Toshi did for 5 years.
It's a story of just no human contact, no toys, no play, just being used as a mill, literally. It's a creature that produces profits through reproduction. And it's much like, unfortunately, cattle medicine and those, I mean, you know, just livestock almost is a good way to think about it, unfortunately. So, Alan, when Toshi got to you, she was in a certain medical state, or a certain emotional state, or lack of emotion state, or how was she when you got her to your home as compared to maybe some of the other dogs or puppies or four-legged friends that you've had, and then maybe a short story about the medical issues that you had with her up front,
and how that may have been linked to her previous life.
Well, she was very withdrawn. She was totally submissive, obviously fearful of any kind of punishment. She would not eat food from a bowl. I don't know what she was fed in the puppy mill, but at the foster home where I picked her up, they had bowls of dry food out for free feeding at all times. And I noticed that she wouldn't even go to the bowls. I took some out, put it on the ground. She would eat it from the ground. She won't take anything from a human's hand. She still does not take even treats from a hand. And she's been with us for 2 years now. She, of course, had been vetted, and she had her teeth cleaned. She had very few teeth left, actually. She had chronic ear infections, and that was the most noticeable thing. And what we first came to Dr. O'Sullivan about was the ear infections just were constantly recurring. The traditional vet treated them. They'd clear up. They'd come back. Personality-wise, as I said, totally submissive. She followed the other dogs. She never led. We'd take the dogs on walks, and while two were out front, not well-trained, pulling on their leashes, she would waddle behind because she had no muscle tone at all to speak of. She had never been on walks. She had never run around. She didn't know how to play. She is afraid of the squeak of a squeaky toy. She runs away if one of the other dogs squeaks a toy. Over time, I noticed on walks that she stopped to urinate over and over and over, and I asked our vet to check and see if there was some kind of problem. It might have just been marking, but it might have been a problem as well. And they ran tests and discovered that Tashi had blood in her urine as well as crystals. And so over a period of close to 9 months, we had her on several different antibiotics and other medications, and nothing would clear up the blood in her urine. And finally, one day the traditional vet had phoned me and said, "We just don't know what to do. I've asked everybody I know. I've gone online. I've called experts. We know she needs more fluid. She needs more water. You changed her food," which was at their advice. We had tried numerous antibiotics. She said, "We just don't know what to do." And luckily for me, luckily for Tashi, and for all of us, I was in a class at the local university that Dr. O'Sullivan offers on Introduction to Holistic Veterinary Care. And after class one night, I just asked her if she would see Tashi, and that was the beginning of getting a good dog, a healthy dog.
She's like so gracious. That's just silly. The classes that I teach at one of the local universities, well, it's a college here in downtown, and we do Introduction to Holistic Veterinary Medicine, Holistic Approach to the Senior Pet, Holistic Approach to, at this point, we're starting a class on cats, because cats are not small dogs, and in veterinary medicine, we have a tendency to treat them that way, and we end up with problems just like we ended up with Tashi. So those classes are informative to an open public that just is curious and just don't know. And that's why doing things like we're doing right now are just so important, because people just don't know that these things are available. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, that if you're told there's nothing else we can do, or we've tried everything, or she may not get better, especially when you're watching your animal bleed, be uncomfortable, be painful, not put on weight, or whatever those things that just make your heart crush, it's very difficult and heartbreaking and not very empowering and doesn't do a darn thing to help your loved one. So knowing that there are other options out there that are based in Western medicine, traditional Chinese medicine, and used together to try and get to a best result, and the open-mindedness of the owner, the client, the caretaker, the advocate is super, super important. So it's not as though we're asking some people to do things that are completely never heard of. We want to make sure that through shows like this, through classes, through clients talking to people, through feeling empowered through information, whether it's Western or traditional Chinese or anything, that we are more open-minded to seek assistance through different modalities. So hopefully with our listener base can kind of spread that word. And it doesn't mean that we're negative or naysayers or finger pointers about anybody or any techniques. It's just that, just like you and I, certain things work for certain people and certain creatures. So luckily, Ellen and Tashi got to somebody that thinks a little bit differently. And it's not like it was an easy road, but it worked fair enough. Is that fair enough to say, Ellen? Yeah. So a couple things that Ellen said that are so important when we think about our relationship with our animals and sometimes traditional vets or you just trying to help them out at home are things like our ear infections were being treated and then they just kept coming back. So I call that a Band-Aid over a bullet hole and cutting off the branches rather than getting to the roots. So, you know, cutting off the branches of our weeds or our trees, those type of things make things look pretty and they do help with pain or discomfort for short periods of time, but getting to the roots of the problem and literally digging them out is quite an investigative process, and I really think that that's where traditional Chinese medicine shines because it's a completely different way of looking at what's going on inside the creature. And Tashi, her blood and her urine and her crystals were directly related to her ear infections in traditional Chinese medicine. So we were able to take Tashi as a full creature and address all of her issues by maybe to the chagrin of Ellen and her husband, changing everything about their lives. And quite quickly, for folks, as I recall, walked into the office, had all of the paperwork, and I kept flipping pages and flipping pages and flipping pages. I'm like, yeah, I'm actually going to ask you to change every single thing you're doing with your dog. I do remember your husband just sat down. It's like, what? And who are you? And what are you doing? So I'm gonna hand this back to Ellen, so she can give you her perspective and her memory of those days. And I do remember calling her Tasha instead of Tashi, which I was immediately corrected at. I'm like back across the knuckles there. But she had, and still has. Just because she's doing better doesn't mean that she doesn't have the foundations, you know, the root of supply of the issues that got her where she was when I met her. So we always are mindful of that. But I'd like to hear from Ellen what her initial thoughts were when she got the news that everything was going to change. And that we'll start there. So here you go.
That's funny. I hadn't thought about that in a long time. But, yeah. Changing diet was number one, and I want to say before I forget, our traditional Western vet was 100% for this. She threw up her hands and said, we just don't know what else to do, but when I said, there is this other vet in town who practices both traditional and Asian methodologies, she said, go for it, anything that will help. So we were really glad to hear that. Food was number one. While I had moved everybody from dry food to wet, and I always tried to buy really good food, Tashi needed totally grain-free, first and foremost. And since that time. I've been learning a lot about going GMO-free as well. And that's really difficult to do sometimes because there are political problems out there. I don't know what's happening in Arizona where we are right now. I know in California the voters actually voted down labeling GMO-free, but certainly it would be helpful if everything was labeled GMO-free. Back to Tashi's diet. First and foremost was, can I change all three dogs? Because it's really a pain in the butt to just feed one thing and the other, and everybody needs to be able to share. Thankfully, the answer to that was yes, and they have all benefited from that. They go through stages, and herbal additions to the diet were very, very important for Tashi. I need to tell you that it took maybe 6 weeks. After 9 months of knowing she had blood in the urine, the dietary changes and adding the herbs, 6 weeks, no blood, which was just totally amazing to me. However, we also had to have probiotics. We had to, as I said, eliminate all grains. So I read labels very, very carefully. Made a big difference in the treats that they're all given. She and her sister Dharma, who was also puppy mill breeding stock, had constant loose stools when they first came home to us. And the traditional treatment of that had been long-term use of Flagyl, which I had never questioned until meeting Dr. O. And the dietary change did away with that as well. It just doesn't happen unless somehow they get into something in the yard that they shouldn't have. But they're pretty timid about trying unusual things. Let me see, probiotics, various herbs, basically raw food.
Thank you very much. So Tashi was a, not necessarily a poster child for, she basically had what's considered a damp heat condition where the carbohydrates and the grains in her diet coupled with lack of care, confinement and not being able to express herself at all as a dog, right? She was just a piece of flesh that was used for purposes. It can cause a lot of stagnation, a lot of heat, and it's considered kind of a phlegmy process where the infection in her ear, you know, that kind of smelly, sticky, itchy, inflammatory stuff coming out of the ear that you just can't get to the bottom of, and then that sticky, smelly, thick, bleeding stuff coming from the urine that you just can't get to the bottom of, regardless of how many antibiotics you use, really screamed to foundational issues, the air you breathe and the food you eat. Right? So with the food you eat, if you don't have a really healthy garden, a really healthy GI tract filled with all these wonderful bacteria to break down and then digest and process and assimilate the things that you do eat, even the most wonderful nutrition given to our friends and to ourselves, of course, we can eat the most wonderful high-priced, GMO-free, grain-free, awesome food. And if our GI tract isn't as healthy as possible and prepared to welcome those foods, to make use of them in the best way possible, it's kind of fallen on dead soil, barren soil. So the probiotics were key, trying to get all those healthy bugs into a GI tract that had been neglected for her whole life. And she was 6 when I met her, 6 years old. So getting those in, changing their diet were foundational to, in my opinion, every patient I see. Every patient's different, but those were trying to lay some sort of stable
bedding for any of the other improvements that we would have. And luckily for us and for Tashi, these things, these fundamental changes in her life and the approach to nurturing her worked, and they worked quite well, and she was very responsive to them, which actually made everybody smile. And the, to be perfectly frank with you, she had a habit of coming to the office and leaving a little pee sample in the office every darn time she came in. So it was kind of a, it kind of became like this running joke. It's like, how's her urine today? And like, and if we didn't know, we would definitely find out within, I don't know, 2 to 3 minutes, right? So she was just so accommodating as a patient to just make sure I could see that things were yellow versus red. So, and that actually has continued on for, gosh, going on a year now. But back to our foundational veterinary care. She is a wonderful recipient of so much love, so much tolerance and open-mindedness to change, because having an open relationship between Ellen and myself, and of course the dogs, and of course the husband, and of course the folks at the food store and those types of things is fundamental. When Tashi would sneeze or not eat or do this or do that, we all got together as a crisis management team, which is so important, because everything that Tashi and every other patient that sometimes we neglect to pay attention to is they're trying to tell us something, and we just need to listen. And even if we don't know what they're saying, being mindful of it is fundamentally important. And I don't care what patient, any non-human next to humans too, of course, we're just harder to interpret, it guides our treatment, it guides our nutrition, it guides everything, and that they always, always, bar none, know better than we do. It's just sometimes we don't speak their language because, in my opinion, we're always just moving too darn fast, we're too busy, and truth be known, too uptight. So if we just pay attention to them and listen to them, they always know better. So in her case, I hope that the listening audience has had a chance to either see a Tibetan Spaniel or can look it up, because with Tashi, one of her health indicators has always been her tail, in my opinion. When I see her come in or see her anywhere, the positioning of her tail is critical. And the Tibetan Spaniels, I'll turn this back over to Ellen, because you can read volumes, if I'm not mistaken, about how she's feeling physically, mentally, digestively, all of those things by the positioning of her tail. And these are indicators that I'd like Ellen to share with you that also happen at home, because over the course of the last year, Tashi has changed dramatically, if that's fair to say, and many of the things that she does at home, but also things she does at the office, on our office visits, and most recently has become quite a little nitwit about things, hasn't she? So in the most loving, kind way, I say that, of course, because to be frank with you, the more my patients get a personality and kind of show their stripes and start to argue just a bit, I know they're coming into their own, and they're getting brave, getting a little bit of self-confidence. So those things are paramount to healing. So I'm going to hand this over to Ellen again to talk to you about some of the changes that she's seen over the course of just the beginning of our relationship, which was GI issues, urinary issues, health issues, and then we'll get into some of the self-confidence issues, personality issues, which aren't issues, is such a bad word. I guess they're progress, and it was just beautiful, beautiful things to see. And then Tashi also had a secondary or tertiary, whatever you want to say, problem with her back, with her ability to move around comfortably and such. So we'll get there, but for right now, I'd just like to ask Ellen to share some of the joy of this little dog and how she, at least for me, just makes me laugh every time I see her. She cracks me up. So back to you, Ellen.
Yes, one thing is Tibetan Spaniels are clowns, and they do generally make you laugh. And she, while she was very, just a blob at first, she would just lie wherever you placed her and wait to see what you next wanted from her. She runs now. She had no muscle tone at all, especially in her hindquarters when we first brought her home, and of course living in a wire cage for 5 years causes that. She could barely waddle on walks, as I had said. She runs now, and if the other dogs are out front and she wants to catch up, she actually almost pulls my husband off his feet trying to catch up. I've got two out front and he's behind with her usually. And he's been known to drop the leash when we've been in an enclosed area. And she will just run and run and run until finally one of us stands in front while the other comes behind. So she's playing a game of not quite hide and seek. We can obviously see her, but it's run away from mom or run away from dad, and the other one snags her again. Great muscle tone. Tibbies are very cat-like in many ways, and they groom one another as cats do. They groom themselves. One thing I didn't mention earlier, her tongue was always out of her mouth a long, long ways, and as it turned out, that was part of her internal health problems. She, everything was swollen and inflamed in the heat, basic to her health problems, including her tongue. And I had never realized that a tongue could swell like that. But now, while it's somewhat habit to have it sticking out, I catch her snoozing with it all the way in, or just a tiny little pink tip showing. She did not groom at all or give puppy kisses like so many dogs do, and she now will give kisses. She runs like crazy. She plays with toys. If you see her, if she catches you watching her, she'll stop, because I think she's still a little bit afraid that you're going to take it away or punish her for running around with a doll in her mouth or whatever. But you can see her being so happy. And the tail is always up. Yes, it's up and over her back where it belongs. Sometimes down if her back is bothering her, or when we first come in for acupuncture with Dr. O, it might be down, but a couple of treatments, a few minutes with those needles doing their job, as soon as she's off the examining table and back on the ground, that tail is up. You know she's feeling better. She's just really enjoying it. We've gone to having massage now. We had tried canine chiropractic, and she did respond for a while to that, but massage, canine massage, is more gentle and easier on all of us. And she just really, really seems to love that. So, yeah, tail up all the time.
Thank you very, very much. She, for our listening audience, she, Tashi is, in a, from a veterinary perspective, she had no affect. When I first met her, she was a poster child, I guess, for learned helplessness. She would sit where you put her. She would not move. She wouldn't hold her head up. She had no, like I said, no affect whatsoever. You couldn't read her. She held her head down. You know, her eyes were half closed. And as Alan was saying, that big old, the tongue of hers lolled out. And now, as Alan pointed out, her a large portion of traditional Chinese medicine is tongue and pulse diagnosis. Now, with that, literally, you literally look at their tongue. You're looking at things like, what color is it? Is it fire engine red? Is it pale, like a light pink, or God help, not white? Get yourself to a veterinary hospital emergency. Is it purple? Is it lavender? Is it thick? Is it thin? Is it trying to creep out the sides between their teeth? Do they have teeth marks on it? Does it have a coating?
Is it white? Is it yellow? Is it thick? Is it thin? All of these things mean something in tradition. Actually, they mean a lot in traditional Chinese medicine, along with the pulse quality, you know, the femoral arteries between their back legs. So with Tashi, when she first came in, you can imagine that with her infections in her ears and that she has blood in her urine and crystals, that you can imagine that the bladder has to get so inflamed, so angry, basically, and so hot that it literally cracks open and starts to bleed. Probably that's kind of a simplified way of looking at it, but the foundation of inflammation, anything that ends in an itis, whether it's dermatitis, otitis, conjunctivitis, anything that ends in an itis, meaning inflammation, I-T-I-S, inflammation. There are five pillars of inflammation: redness, heat, swelling, loss of function, pain. And as poor Alan can attest to, when I give my classes, I must say that, 200, 300, 400 times? Every single night. They're like, what are the five pillars of inflammation? So when we have redness, heat, swelling, loss of function, pain, in varying degrees in any kind of itis that you have. With Tashi, the redness was visible in her tongue. She had redness and swelling in her tongue as a signpost to what was happening in the rest of her. Because when you think about anybody as a full creature, you can't look at her tongue or her bladder or her ears in an isolated situation, because nothing happens in a vacuum. We don't treat an ear and treat a bladder and ignore a tongue or ignore pulses. Those it's just a very, very different, a more inclusive way of thinking about it. And Tashi was telling us, you know, she walks into a room with her tongue out of her mouth, big, red, fire engine red. So we went over that in great detail in our office visits, and teaching, informing, empowering clients to keep track of that at home. It doesn't take coming to see a doctor. It takes paying attention. It takes listening to the signs, listening to the symptoms. And in a different stage of my practice, I used to go get those little paint squares that you, from if you're going to choose different paint colors, and I would have the purples, the lavenders, the pinks, and the reds on a big strip, and I would send them home with clients. I said, so where do you think your dog is today? And I want you to take this home, and I want you to monitor it as they go up the strip or down the strip. And sometimes that was very helpful to just kind of simplify things. And even if clients weren't necessarily super interested or knew what the heck they were doing, you can do that. You can check that every day, every week, some people unfortunately do it every hour, and not really necessary, but it happens. So at this point, I've kind of backed off to, what do you think? You know, what do you think? Is it pink? Is it red? Is it purple? And since these guys are our children, we develop individual ways of monitoring these. Well, it's a little bit more pink today, or it's a little bit more red today, or there's a little purple streak down the middle. So giving people that information, that power, allows them also to feel more comfortable making a phone call. They're like, you know, her tongue's kind of pale today. The information that Tashi gives us is vital, because she has so much stuff going on, and she's had these processes going on, I'm guessing, the majority of her life. And I always call a speeding train, don't I? trying to stand in front of a speeding train that's been running as fast as it can for 5 years is not an easy thing. But keeping track of these signs that she gives us. Now, with the pulses, for me, for everybody that does pulse diagnosis, it is an individual practice, finely tuned instrument. And we all use different lingo and different, it's just a different language, because for me, telling people, it's like a piano wire versus an overcooked piece of spaghetti or a, you know, and they're just like, you've got to be nuts, right? But it's absolutely true. So doing things with teaching clients, first of all, where is the arty? Second of all, how hard do I push? Third of all, it's like trying to ask a client to go through a good year and a half of vet school in an office appointment. So sometimes that works, sometimes it doesn't. But those are indicators that are not often used in traditional Western medicine, but they can tell you so much about what's going on inside the creature, as well as in Tachi's case in particular, doing the pressure points along the spinal cord and asking her, they're called Ashi points, they're called where she's sore today, where she's hot today. I know that Ellen became finally adept at doing heat, which is it's called thermography. Everyone's got a different word for it, but using the palm of your hand to go over your dog very gently and saying, oh, it feels a little warm here. It feels a little cooler here. It feels a little warm here. Now, remember, with inflammation, redness, heat, swelling, loss of function, pain, as you feel heat coming out of certain parts of your dog, not only do they indicate possibly inflammation, but they're indicators with our acupressure points of what may be going on inside the dog as well as outside on tense muscles, spinal cord inflammation, compensatory things. If my rear end hurts and I'm using my front end to pull myself up, those muscles might be overworking. So this kind of education for clients it's a long road. And everybody involved has to be very patient and very willing. I mean, you have to want to know to go through something like that to some people, and it's fine. If you want to just come in, sit down, have the doctor do their thing, and then take your patient and go home, and then I'll see you again in 7 days. And that's much more of a traditional Western thought process, you know, take two of these and call me in the morning or I'll see you next week type thing. With traditional Chinese medicine, and absolutely for my practice, that's really not even acceptable, is it? I'm going to hand this back over to Ellen, and if she would be so kind as to share her experience with not only the modalities that she chose to try for Tachi, which was incredible because she went all over with regard to different providers, different modalities, different wait times, different prices, different everything. And her dedication to Tachi's recovery and getting that tail to flip up and develop the personalized she has now, much to our chagrin, it was a long road. And I think it's very important that everyone hears how that went and how she made those decisions and that what kind of results she feels that she got for Tachi or that Tachi got for her. And knowing that that is not typical for each case, but knowing about these modalities is very, very important. So here she is again. Thank you.
Well, let's see. We've tried almost everything. We started, as I said, with the traditional vet. The Western vet that we had fallen in love with here in our area chose in the middle of Tachi's blood in the urine crisis to leave that practice, and she went to work for our local Humane Society running their spay-neuter clinic, which was wonderful. But she had also been the one who did the chiropractic adjustments on all of our animals. So once she was at the new clinic, she would still do those, but only on Fridays. And only without appointments, and you came in and waited and waited and waited. And that was very stressful for both the humans and the dogs to just sit there for usually at least an hour before it was your turn to have the chiropractic done. And when we discovered through Dr. O'Sullivan that there was a local canine masseuse available to us for only $5 a session more than the chiropractic, and she would come to our house at our convenience, it was the obvious thing to try, and it has proven to be so successful. All three dogs get up on our bed with her, and she just plays with them at first and plays relaxing music that she brings with her, and I place one dog at a time in her arms, and she spends time just what appears to be petting them, but she is actually giving them wonderful massages, much as you and I would go to the masseuse and find ourselves relaxing after that. The dogs totally love it, and my husband and I love not having to wait in a clinic waiting area full of dogs of all sizes and the tension that comes with that for the dogs primarily, but we love that. Now, Tashi has turned into a real dog, and as I mentioned before, there are some specifics about Tibetan Spaniels that are a little bit unusual. They are very cat-like, not only in the grooming, but they love to climb. They tend to want to relax up on the top of the back of your couch or looking out windows and that type of thing. Well, Tashi and her sister have never been able to climb. We did build them a ramp. My husband built a ramp so they can get up on the bed while Danny jumps like most Tibetan Spaniels would. For his own sake, we're trying to teach him to use the ramp too, so that as he grows older, he hasn't done damage to his body. But the girls now run up the ramp instead of slowly climbing up. And Tashi, above all, wants to climb. She comes in Dr. O'Sullivan's office or all around our house, and anything she can get on her hind legs, get her front legs up taller, she tries and tries and tries to get up on top. And she has actually managed to get up onto our coffee table, which scares the heck out of me, because if she falls off, I mean, she does want to just keep going, and it's the coming down that's a potential problem at this point. She's trying to reject acupuncture at this point. She gives Dr. O'Sullivan a really hard time and just keeps turning in circles on the examining table while the needles are trying to be placed and so on. But then she'll get down and run in circles in here and climb up on anything she can climb up on as well. So it's really pretty wonderful watching her be a happy, happy dog. You would think she was a new puppy these days instead of the 7-year-old lady that she is. But she's wonderful.
Thank you for that. I really wish I could share with everyone that's listening how Tashi has turned into her own. I just call her a beast. She's hysterical. She, you know, before when we had this 20 pounds of fur with lack of affect and so much suffering is a strong word, but I believe it's accurate. And she literally now comes in with her tail up over, and my office is I call it a house of possibilities thinking and a free expression of joy for my patients. So they get cut loose, no leashes, no nothing. I ask my clients, don't talk to your dogs. They're not listening anyway. So just, you know, stop with the, trying to tell them sit or come or those type of things. Like, just, it's too limiting, right? So for her now, she's Tashi, that is. I don't even think Ellen speaks to her much anymore, so she's learning as well. That she comes in here, she's got her tail up, and every time, although she's always done this, I go to pet her or anything like that, she waits till I get my hand right on top of them and just goes and scoots right away from me. And, you know, we watch everything she does. Is she limping? Is she got a bump in her back? Is her tail up? How's her head carriage? How's her tongue placement when she's relaxed? All of those things, although it's fun and games, it's also diagnostic. So we're always working to see what it is she's trying to tell us. And most recently, when she does get on the table for acupuncture, she has turned into somewhat of a 20-pound bucking bronco with hair all over the place. So, You know, to be perfectly frank, she wins. If she's at a point right now where she says, I don't need needles this week, I'm okay with that. And after Ellen and I finished laughing uncontrollably, we just put her down. She trots away and probably, like, pees in the corner or something like that. But she's just a happy, joyful, spirited individual. And I do have a couple more things I'd like to go over as we backtrack with Tashi's experience here. But she is a true representative of overcoming all of the forces that try to hold you down, and whether that be sticking you in a cage. And I know that our listeners, maybe it's just me, but you can relate to what life in a cage is like. Okay, it may not be torture, it may not be horrible food, but not expressing what it is you are possibly meant to do, following your joy. Humans have a tendency to not do that, to find things that keep us more busy, more encapsulated, more restrained, more stagnant and depressed. And I'm no psychologist, it's just that I'm a human and I get it. And watching this dog with love and awesome care, and that's not me patting myself on my back, that just means that whatever it is that this dog needed, mostly spiritual, mostly emotional, mostly, you know, four-legged and two-legged friends to come out of her past, is a joy and a privilege to be part of. I mean, bar none. So as we started this conversation today about puppy mills and about adoption of I call them the untouchables. You know, they're animals that other people have forgotten about, and that they're either too sick or their history's too damaged for people to think about, because they want the perfect this and the perfect that, because that's part of our human stigma. Please let that go. You know, save a life and save yourself. And that's not a tagline for something. It's true. I believe it's true. So I've got a couple more minutes to talk about something. I don't mean to get too emotional on all of our listeners, but that part is so important to what we're doing today, is that if we would just slow down and listen to these guys and the life lessons they have to teach us and the recovery lessons that they have to teach us and the trust lessons that they have to teach us, we might just turn out to be better people. So that's my counseling portion of the show, and I'll just stop. But one of the issues that we had with Tashi, this is pure Western veterinary medicine with a traditional Chinese medicine frosting on top, is that Tashi, as Ellen had pointed out, had blood in her urine along with crystals. Now, the kinds of crystals that we have usually are in two types. You have calcium oxalate and struvite. Now, these two kinds of crystals demand a completely different nutrition. So when we went to go speak to Ellen and to her husband and to the pet food suppliers, there were certain things we had to have to do to make sure that Tashi never went down the same road to her struvite crystals again. Now, that being said, I have a question coming in. If you are unable to adopt a puppy mill rescue due to living arrangements, what else can you do to help? I'm going to hand this one off to Ellen. Okay, this is the caller calling in. There is always, please go online if you have a certain breed that you really like. I can guarantee you that breed has a rescue organization. Donations, of course, and I'm going to hand this off to Ellen for a moment, but my biggest plea to you who are interested is spread the word. Let people know that these puppy mills exist. Let people know that where pet stores are getting their dogs, and contact these rescue agencies, contact these folks that are giving their life and their time and all their effort. Ask them specifically, in that we want to think globally, but absolutely act locally as well. So here's Ellen, since she's living with it, and then we'll get back to the diet in just a moment. So thank you for the question, and here's Ellen.
Well, I really think Dr. O'Sullivan just covered most of the options. It's the rescue groups. And as she said, if there's a specific rescue or breed that you like, I guarantee you there's a rescue group for it, because there are people out there who, especially recently with the bad economy, have had to give up their dogs. If you bought, anyone who's bought a purebred dog, in the purchase contract, there's almost 100% at the time a clause saying, if you can't keep this dog, you must contact the breeder and return the dog to that breeder, if at all possible. I've never heard of a breeder refusing to accept her dog back. But the puppy mill dogs, I know my two came originally from Europe. I'm not sure where. There are no legitimate breeders in the United States of Tibetan Spaniels, at least, who would ever sell a puppy of theirs to a puppy mill knowingly. I have no idea how the rescue groups, or the one that I got these two from, were able to know or establish a relationship with the puppy mill in their area where they got them. But I know that there are newsletters out there, because somehow or other, puppy mill owners let the general public know, I'm going to auction off all my dogs or my old stock at such and such a place at such and such a time. I've also heard horror stories that if a dog doesn't get purchased at that auction, they get taken out back and killed. But anything you can do through the rescue group, contact them. Go to your local Humane Society and volunteer. They volunteers go and walk the dogs. They always need volunteers to come in and play with the dogs and help them learn to socialize. Donations, of course, always.
Best Friend Animal Sanctuary.
Best Friend Animal Sanctuary. Thank you, Dr. O'Sullivan. I had forgotten about that one specifically.
But,
yeah, they're wonderful groups. Danny, our half Tibetan Spaniel, half Chihuahua, was actually taken out of a shelter down in the Phoenix area by the Akita Rescue Group, just because they have volunteers that go through the shelters and bring out any dogs that fall into their breed, and the woman couldn't pass up this cute small little puppy who was on the, okay, if he's not adopted, he's going to be euthanized tomorrow list. Anything at all.
Thank you very much, Ellen, and thank you for the question. I really appreciate that. All of our recommendations, whatever you can do within your living arrangement, within your financial arrangement, within your time arrangement, would be greatly, greatly appreciated. And like I said, spreading the word and letting people know is very powerful, very powerful. We're running short on time here, but I do want to point out the situation with Tashi and something that will be important for our listeners down the road, knowing that regardless of what we want to do with our food or our supplements or our lifestyle, and the things that we can buy online or we can look up or the pet store people recommend, we want to make sure that we take into consideration every underlying issue that your patient has. So if somebody tries to recommend something to you, whether it's food or a supplement, please take seriously the recommendations of the people that have actually put their hand on your dog, that have our cat or horse, that know your history, know the biochemical, nutritional needs of some of the issues that you have. Like I said, she had stones. Our struvites, first of all, calcium oxalate, require certain pHs, certain amount of protein, certain amount of phosphorus, certain amount of magnesium, certain amount of acid urine content. You know, it's a big deal, and it makes a big difference. First do no harm is by far the premise of what it is that I do, education and first do no harm. And I'm hoping that that would be true for all of our clients. And our clients and our listeners. And I know that that's true. So in our final minute here, please seek a lesson from our four-legged friends. They have a lot to teach us, and be very mindful of their individual needs, and they will give it back to you a thousandfold guaranteed. And I need to thank Ellen for coming in and spending her time and her story about Sweet Tashi. And I encourage anybody to call in with any questions, whether they're specific or general, about anything that we speak about with holistic veterinary care here on our Blog Talk Radio. And I will be back next week, same time, so please feel free to call in. It'll be 347-215-6138, and we'll have another interesting topic that we can all relate to. And I'm sure we'll be going home and giving Tashi some treats that are nutritious and delicious to thank her for helping us with all of this today. There's so much more we could talk about with Tashi, but it's time that we need to go. So thank you very much, Ellen.
Thank you very much, Dr. O'Sullivan.
Till next time.